simply by devotional service. Punaha, fully complete. Kutaha, where is the question? Anyat, other things. Kala viputam, which are finished in the course of time. Translation. My devotees, who are always satisfied to be engaged in my loving service, are not interested even in the four principles of liberation, Salokya, Svarupya, Samipya, and Sharsti, although these are automatically achieved by their service. What then is to be said of such perishable happiness as elevation to the heavenly, to the higher planetary systems? Please repeat. My devotees, who are always satisfied to be engaged in my loving service, are not interested even in the four principles of liberation, Salokya, Svarupya, Samipya, and Sharsti, although these are automatically achieved by their service. What then is to be said of such perishable happiness as elevation to the higher planetary systems? Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Srila Bilvimangal Thakur has estimated the value of liberation as follows. Muktihi svayam mukuli tanjalai sevate smyan dharmartha kama gataya samaya pratiksha. Bivimangal Thakur realized that if one develops his natural devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, mukti stands before him with folded hands to offer all kinds of service. In other words, the devotee is already liberated. There is no need for him to aspire for different types of liberation. The pure devotee automatically achieves liberation even without desiring it. Om Agyanati Mirandasya Agyanandana Sarakaya Chakshurun Militam Gena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. It's a very beautiful description and conversation going on between Lord Vishnu and Durvasa Muni, who arrived at his door seeking shelter from the Sudarsan Chakra, which was chasing him due to his offense at Ambarish Maharaj. So I wanted to begin by kind of revisiting some of the last verses, because Lord Vishnu is explaining to Durvasa the reciprocation between him and his devotees. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said to the Brahmin, I am completely under the control of my devotees. Indeed, I am not at all independent. Because my devotees are completely devoid of material desires, I sit only within the core of their hearts. What to speak of my devotee? Even those who are devotee of my devotees are very dear to me. O best of the Brahmins, without saintly persons, for whom I am the only destination, I do not desire to enjoy my transcendental bliss and my supreme opulences. Since pure devotees give up their homes, wives, children, relatives, riches, and even their lives simply to serve me, without any desire for material improvement in this life or in the next, how can I give up such devotees at any time? As chaste women bring their gentle husbands under control by service, the pure devotees who are equal to everyone and completely attached to me in the core of their heart bring me under their full control. My devotees who are always satisfied to be engaged in my loving service are not interested even in the four principles of liberation, Salokya, Svarupya, Samipya, and Sharsti, although these are automatically achieved by their service. What then is to be said of such perishable happiness as elevation to the higher planetary systems? So he's talking about love. He's talking about something beyond action for reward. Last time I gave class, you may remember that we spoke about Maharaj Ambarish just when he started the Vrat of Akadasi. And we discussed about two different types of activities. One is performed with the body, It's called Chesta Rupa. It's the gross body, what we do with our limbs, what we do with our senses. And the other, more important or propelling factor that would enthuse one to act with his Chesta Rupa in a particular way is called one's Bhava Rupa. The Bhava Rupa is our inner body. In the Bhagavad Gita, there's that famous verse, Yam Yam Vapi Smaram Bhavam Tajanti Anta Kalevaram Tam Tam Ivagdi Kauntaya Satatad Bhava Bhavitaha. A lot of us, kind of in conversation, consider what you're thinking of at the time of death is there you will go. But on the conscious plane, we have constant flow of different images that sometimes conflict due to so many activities that we perform, due to so many things we've done in the past. There's a whole reservoir lying somewhere which seems to all of a sudden manifest in the conscious mind. So an introspective person considers, where does that come from? What causes me to think that way? And this word bhava is the answer, the bhava rupa. The subtle body is not just the conscious mind that we're aware of when we're thinking. It's a whole realm beyond that. Just like when we look at each other, we see the skin and the eyes and the nose and the gross body on the outside, but we know that from medical science there are so many different elements beneath it. Muscles, muscle tissue, veins, arteries, organs, and even small tiny little capillaries, neurotransmitters in the brain, RNA, DNA, different things that so many different levels, even in the gross body. So similarly, in the subtle body, we categorize them as mind, intelligence, and false ego. But when we dig down deep, just like a surgeon sometimes has to get down to a very, they use nanotechnology with microscopes and machines to get a particular detail in someone's gross body, what to speak of the subtle body, which really has no gross form. So how this subtle body, this bhava rupa, develops is an interesting meditation. How we develop that so that when that subtle body leaves this gross body and goes into ethereal space, then nature responds by giving a corresponding body. So that subtle body is the accumulation of everything we do. We're building, influencing, developing, and constructing. It's kind of like shape-shifting our subtle body as we think. Years ago I had a problem with, it was a tense time for me. And I began to get headaches. I would wake up 2 or 3 in the morning, pounding headache. And I went to Mayapur. I tried different things. I was taking headache pills every few days to try and relieve myself. And I went to Mayapur and there was this one Ayurvedic masseuse. He's now initiated by Jayapataka Maharaj, but at the time he was Bhakt Oscar. And he explained that the brain is more or less like the whole connection to everything else in our body. It's common sense. Everything from the body goes up through this little channel in our neck into the brain, and that communication goes on constantly. And he explained that tension in the back of the neck, sometimes people just kind of move around and try to loosen that area up because that flow of prana and thought process flow becomes restricted. When we think and become tense, muscles become tight. It's a natural reaction. And that constant anxiety, that constant tension, tightens everything in the whole system so that that can't flow. So he would massage and he would... It wasn't like baby crying, but just the act of him taking these little wooden things in his thumbs and pressing like acupuncture to release the tension that had been built up over time just due to my anxiety, completely relieved that anxiety and tension over the course of a week. And I haven't had a headache since then. So, similarly, when we perform devotional activities with a motive that's selfishly oriented, such as in this example, the desire for liberation, then it adds a spice to the preparation that's totally unpalatable to Krishna. And the development of rasa and love. We spoke last time about three different types of people, if you remember when we were discussing about the gopis' conversation with Krishna. And they said, what kind of lover is the best? And Krishna explained that there's different kinds of lovers. There's those that reciprocate only when reciprocated with. In other words, only when there's some reward, only when another person reciprocates with them, will they reciprocate with that person. One type of person. Then another type of person is one who reciprocates regardless of whether there's reciprocation from the opposite party or not. And he gave the two examples of the pure devotee and parents. Parents reciprocate with love even if the child doesn't reciprocate. And third is the person who never reciprocates, the Atmaramas and the cold-hearted people. So let's take that particular aspect and analyze it a little bit, and we see that the action of performing service with a desire of for the reward of liberation is a reward. It's a desire for a reciprocation of a particular way, otherwise my devotional service becomes slackened or lazy. So here, Krishna is explaining how dear his devotees are, and Bidhimangal Thakur is quoted in the purport. Bidhimangal Thakur was a South Indian Brahmin who lived in the 8th century in the Vishnu Swami Sampradaya. I think most people know his story. He's the one that, like Ajamil, became intimate with a prostitute named Chintamani. And when his father died, Bidhimangal Thakur had an appointment with Chintamani. So he was trying to hurry the priest. Come on, let's get this funeral over with so I can go be with Chintamani. And towards the end of the funeral, it started to rain. So he hurried everybody up. He took care of their business. And then he went for his meeting with Chintamani. And the rain became so powerful. He lived on one side of the river. And Chintamani's house of home for her activities was on the other side of the river. And he came to the river, and due to the flash floods from the rain, the river had become flooded. And he was wondering how I can get across. And all of a sudden, he saw this thing floating in the river, and he grabbed onto it and he started swimming across. And he realized he'd grabbed onto a dead body, and he used it as a boat to get across to the other side. And then he came to Chintamani's compound, and she had a high wall. And he started to climb the wall, and he grabbed what he thought was a vine, but it was a snake. And finally he made it over the wall, and he arrived at Chintamani's door, and Chintamani was thinking, there's no way Bidhimangal Thakur is coming to this today. It's just too bad outside. And then she heard the knock on the door, and opened the door, and there was Bidhimangal Thakur, ready for Chintamani. And she just said, my dear sir, oh my God, I can't believe you've done that. If you had the kind of enthusiasm that you have for me, who am actually cheating you for Krishna, then you'd be a pure devotee. And his past sukriti, his bhava rupa, the activities he'd performed in his past kind of kicked in, and Bidhimangal Thakur realized, oh my God, how fallen I've become. And Chintamani actually enthused him. She said, tomorrow, I'm going to dedicate my life to Krishna. And he became enthused. And he wrote one book called Krishna Karnamrita. And in the first verse, he pays his obeisances to her for helping him realize his misdirected sentiments. And in the end of the book, which is 108 verses, very beautiful descriptions of Lord Krishna. Krishna Karnamrita means amrita, nectar, karna for the ear of Krishna. It's prayers to Krishna, which are like nectar for his ears, the Krishna Karnamrita. And at the end of the book, he quotes this verse that Srila Prabhupada quoted in the purport about how liberation, mukti, stands at the doorstep of one who's performing devotional service. Krishnadas Kaviraj, who wrote Chaitanya Charitamrita, has written also a commentary on that book. And he said that it's actually a personality of liberation, stands before the devotee and begs, please, engage me in the Lord's service. So automatically, liberation is included in the activities of the devotees. Due to recent events with Indra and Vititravirya, it brings to mind and questioned, devotees often wonder, where did they go? Oh God, he went to Goloka directly, or wherever. None of us really know. No one knows where another person goes. We don't know each other's hearts deeply enough. The bhava that we've developed, sadatad bhava bhavita, that which propels us, is truly only known to Lord Krishna as the super soul. But through indications of different people who have left their body, and the acharya's descriptions of where and what they got, give us some indication of how it happens and what the process is. So rather than speculating or explaining my views, let's hear from different shastra what happens to different devotees and different people when they die, and what propels them to what location. Also, Lord Kapiladev spoke this verse to Devahuti, practically the exact same verse that Lord Vishnu, because they're the same person, is explaining to Durvasa Muni. Salokya sharsti samipya swarup yaikatvam apyuta divyamanam nagrinanti vinamat sevanam janaha. A pure devotee does not accept any kind of liberation. Salokya sharsti samipya swarupya or ikatva, becoming one with me, even though they are offered by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Purport. Lord Chaitanya teaches us how to execute pure devotional service out of spontaneous love for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In his Shikshastika, he prays to the Lord, O Lord, I do not wish to gain from you any wealth, nor do I wish to have a beautiful wife, nor do I wish to have many followers. All I want from you in this life and life after life is that I remain a pure devotee at your lotus feet. There is a similarity between the prayers of Lord Chaitanya and the statements of Srimad Bhagavatam. Lord Chaitanya prays in life after life, indicating that a devotee does not even desire the cessation of birth and death. The yogis and empiric philosophers desire cessation from the process of birth and death, but a devotee is satisfied to remain even in the material world to execute devotional service. Now, just like if we have a physical malady that requires correction, sometimes it requires a rather intense act to correct it, like surgery. It's not, you don't just take a pill or lay down and rest or get a massage. Sometimes things require surgery in order to cut open, go in, cut out the bad thing and remove it. So similarly, people in the material world naturally, One of the enthusing motives in the beginning of our devotional service is relief, desire to get out of this material world. But the fine line is that a pure devotee, it's being described here, doesn't desire that. So how do we get from the point where we're desiring it, motivated by it, to not being motivated by it? Perhaps some other examples will help us understand how and why that process is suggested. I think a lot of devotees have this concept that at death, poof, back to Godhead, immediate, just direct. And perhaps it comes from this story. Narada Muni is explaining to Vyasadeva about after he'd heard from the Bhaktivedantas He was a young boy, and then he did meditation according to their instructions. He actually saw Lord Krishna, Lord Vishnu, within his heart. But then the Lord explained to him, "My dear Narada, you're not mature yet. The time is not right. I regret to inform you that now you won't be able to see me." And then he explains about his death after he'd already had this darshan. And so, Brahman Vyasadev, in due course of time, I, who was fully absorbed in thinking of Krishna, and who therefore had no attachments, being completely freed from material taints, met with death, as lightning and illumination occur simultaneously. Purport. For the pure devotee, such a change takes place exactly like lightning and illumination follow simultaneously. They're the same. There's no separation between the lightning and the time that you see it. That is to say, a devotee simultaneously changes his material body and develops a spiritual body by the will of the Supreme. Even before death, a pure devotee has no material affection due to his body's being spiritualized, like a red-hot iron in contact with fire. Text 1628. Having been awarded a transcendental body befitting an associate of the personality of Godhead, I quit the body made of five elements and thus acquired all acquired fruitive results of work stopped. At the end of the millennium, when the personality of Godhead, Lord Narayan, laid down within the water of devastation, Brahma began to enter into him along with all the created elements, and I also entered into his breathing. So here we have a pure devotee who died thinking of Krishna, simultaneously attained a spiritual body, but what happened to him? Did he go back, poof, to the spiritual world? No. He even merged back into the creative elements and back into the body of Lord Narayan. After 4,300,000,000 solar years, when Brahma awoke to again create by the will of the Lord, all the rishis like Marichi, Angira, Atri, and so on were created from the transcendental body of the Lord, and I also appeared along with them. Purport. The duration of the life of Brahma is 4,320,000 solar years. This is stated also in Bhagavad Gita. So for this period, Brahmaji rests in yoga nidra within the body of Garbhodakshay Vishnu, the generator of Brahma. Thus, after sleeping period of Brahma, when there is again creation by the will of the Lord through the agency of Brahma, all the great rishis again appear from different parts of the transcendental body, as Narada also appears. This means that Narada appears in the same transcendental body, just as a man awakens from sleep in the same body. Sri Narada is eternally free to move in all parts of the transcendental and material creations of the Almighty. He appears and disappears in his own transcendental body, which is without the distinction of a body and soul, like conditioned beings. That's one example. Now let's hear a little more about liberation and how it's achieved. This is Putana. You remember, Putana is a wonderful example. Pundarik Vidyanidhi, when he heard that verse, that Putana was awarded the status of a mother of Krishna due to her offering of the milk. That's when he went, remember when Gadadhar Pandit went and he was wondering, who is this sense enjoyer? We've all heard this story many times, so I don't need to go into it. But that's the verse that sent him into ecstasy for such a long time. And here's a little more detail which reveals what kind of liberation Putana got and why. Putana was always hankering for the blood of human children, and with that desire she came to kill Krishna. But because she offered her breast to the Lord, she attained the greatest achievement. What then is to be said of those who have natural devotion and affection for Krishna as mothers, and who offered him their breast to suck and offered something very dear, as a mother offers something to a child. Give me a second, please. If one offers poison to the breast of Krishna and attains the supreme destination, how much more one will achieve by offering a more poisonous object? If one offers a dear object, certainly one will attain a higher destination. But if one offers a dearer object, then how much more will he attain? And if one offers the dearmost object, he will certainly attain the highest destination. The Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna is always situated within the core of the heart of a pure devotee, and he is always offered prayers by such worshipable personalities as Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva. Because Lord Krishna embraced Putana's body with great pleasure and sucked her breast, although she was a great witch, she attained the position of a mother in the transcendental world and thus achieved the highest perfection. What then is to be said of the cows whose nipples Krishna sucked with great pleasure and who offered their milk very jubilantly with affection, exactly like that of a mother? Commentary. These two verses describe the greatness of Putana's attainment through the mercy of the Lord. Even though Putana was a Rakshasi, her body was tread upon by Krishna's lotus feet, which are situated in the hearts of pure devotees and worshipped by those worthy of worship. Putana's breast milk was drunk by Krishna, and she attained the supreme abode as a mother of the Lord. Details. Which Vaikuntha planet did Putana attain? This verse explains that Putana attained the same planet as Mother Yasoda, Danani Gatim, because it's a mother, and there are no mothers in other planets. Therefore, Putana attained Goloka. But her position was predominated by happiness and reverence. She did not attain the place predominated by service in prema. One cannot say that she attained the status of a mother. Text 10.6.36 says that the place is reserved for those who are anuragi, with pure loving attachment for Krishna. Here, verse 38 says that the cows and motherly gopis who fed milk to Krishna during the Brahma Vimohan Lila attained a higher destination than Putana. How could Putana, whose enmity was equal to Kamsa's, though she imitated the dress and emotion of a gopi, attain the same status as Yasoda? Therefore, Uddhava says in 3.2.23, Putana attained the status like a nurse. Thus, in the present verse, some interpret the word Janani, or mother, to be a datri, or nurse. But even then, one should not say that Putana was a direct nurse of Krishna. Rather, she attained a form like a nurse in Goloka, filled with shukaisvarya, reverential happiness. So it's not that one just goes through a door and automatically ends up in a place with everybody else in an intimate, loving relationship with Krishna, just because they attained a particular liberation. So this gives us indication of some of those finer points of desire, aspiration, reciprocation, and result, and why a devotee wouldn't want that. Because he wants to reciprocate in love with Krishna, why would he take something so far less just to get out of the inconvenience of the material world or some other situation? Next example. This is another nice one. Agasura. When Agasura, you remember Agasura was the big snake who opened his mouth and all the cowherd boys and calves and everybody walked into the snake, and then Krishna walked into his. And when Krishna entered Agasura's body, by his touch, Agasura became purified. When the demons, so then he tried to close his mouth and Krishna expanded himself. and his eyes bulged and popped out of his sockets because there was no, it was a snake body. There was no other holes. So when he died, when the demon's air of life passed away through the hole in the top of his head, Krishna glanced over the dead calves and cowherd boys and brought them back to life. Then Mukunda, who can give one liberation, came out from the demon's mouth with his friends. From the body of the gigantic python, a glaring effulgence came out, illuminating all directions, and stayed individually in the sky until Krishna came out from the corpse's mouth. Then, as all the demigods looked on, that effulgence entered into the body of Krishna. Commentary. Sridhar Swami says that the effulgence coming out from the python's body became purified and attained the status of Shuddhasattva. A demon's getting liberation is displayed here to instill faith in people. Through the light of the soul, like the light of the Param Brahma, is normally invisible, though the light is generally invisible, Krishna arranged that the individual effulgence of the soul was visible to everyone, to directly show the world the Lord's quality of granting liberation, even to a demon. This is Sanatan Goswami's opinion in Vaishnav Toshini. According to later verses, Agasura attained Swarupya Mukti, a completely spiritual body exactly like that of Vishnu, and attained the Lord's abode. Therefore, the light in the spiritual body which he attained at that moment, therefore the light which was visible was the light from Agasura's spiritual body, which he attained at that moment. Because his body was spiritual, it could not be seen with material eyes. Agasura's entering the Lord's body was just a show, as in the case of Shishupal and Dantavakra. Though Shishupal and Dantavakra attained Swarupya Mukti, as eternal associates of the Lord, when they died, a light from their bodies entered the Lord. This is another opinion about the visibility of the light. This happened in the presence of the demigods, who were greatly astonished. With the use of the genitive absolute, it can also mean that Agasura's soul entered Krishna, not caring for the demigods, even though they were present. Similarly, Trinavarta, when Krishna grabbed on to his neck and he got taken up into the sky, because of Krishna's touch, he was purified. All the different demons. So demons can attain liberation, but it's not the liberation of intimate exchange with Krishna. That exchange is far greater. And when we enter into the loving reciprocation and hear about the residents of Braj and their love for Krishna, compared to the result of the liberation offered to the demons or offered through these different Shalokya, Samipya, Sharsti, Swarupya, it pales. It's no longer attractive. One last comparison, which explains what happens to a devotee when he dies, or she dies, if they've been developing this desire for a loving relationship with Krishna, is revealed in the story of the gopis in the Rasa dance. This particular purport deals with the gopis who were restricted from leaving their homes when Krishna blew his flute. And the purport is quite technical, and I hope I can finish up in a few minutes to cover it. But it's very informative what we can look forward to and what the process is of attaining our original spiritual body. Some of the gopis were milking cows when they heard Krishna's flute. They stopped milking and went off to meet him. Some left the milk curdling on the stove, and others left cakes burning in the oven. Some of them were getting dressed, feeding milk to their infants, or rendering personal service to their husbands. But they gave up all these duties and went to meet Krishna. Other gopis were taking their evening meals, washing themselves, putting on cosmetics, or applying kajal to their eyes. But all the gopis stopped these activities at once, and though their clothes and ornaments were in complete disarray, rushed to meet Krishna. Their husbands, fathers, brothers, and other relatives tried to stop them, but Krishna had already stolen their hearts. Enchanted by the sound of his flute, They refused to turn back. Some of the gopis, however, could not manage to get out of their homes, and instead they remained at home with eyes closed, meditating on him with pure love. Commentary. Rupa Goswami describes that there were two categories of gopis, the eternally perfect Nitya Siddha gopis, and those who became perfect by practicing bhakti yoga, sadhana siddha. The sadhana siddhas are two categories. Those belong to special groups and those who don't. Of the special groups, there are two, the Rishicharis and the Shuddhacharis. So what happens is that when Krishna performs his Nitya Leela, he goes from universe to universe, takes birth, grows up, performs his leelas, then he leaves and goes to another universe and starts the whole thing up. So there's constant leelas going on in different universes. When someone attains sadhana siddha and becomes perfected, they don't go directly back to the spiritual world of Goloka Vrindavan. They go to Gokul in a Boma Leela where Krishna is performing his Leela. Krishna travels with an entourage. His mother, his father, his associates also go from universe to universe and perform his Leelas with him. So at the time of the Rasa Dance, two kinds of people were attracted to hear to go and be with Krishna. Those who are his Nitya Siddha associates, who are the gopis from the Goloka, who are traveling with him, automatically run out of their homes and go to meet Krishna. Those who are not quite that perfect, although they've attained perfection, have taken birth in Gokul and are associating with those Nitya Siddha associates to burn off any final impurities and to become trained up how to render service and relate with Krishna. This is described. Our acharyas take the Sanskrit verses and dissect it, just like the doctor with the nanotechnology goes in and is dealing with performing an operation. They've gone into the text. What is that verse about the six Goswamis? Nana Shastra Vachara Naika Nipano Sadharma Samthapako, that they've scrutinizingly studied the Shastra in order to reveal these sentiments. That the Gopakanya gopis are actually Nitya Siddhas, these are daughters of the cowherds, is established by Lord Brahma in his prayers. Similarly, we have words. So, the Devakanya, daughters of the demigods, there's two different, sorry, I'm splitting through here because of time. The Nitya Siddhas are of two types. There's those that are always with Krishna, and there are some who are actually expansions of the demigods and expansions of those Nitya Siddha gopis. The Rishichari gopis. Rishichari gopis are sadhana siddha. When Lord Ram was in the Dandakaranya forest, these devotees were worshipping Gopal, wanting to engage in service to him. Devotees of Gopal in Dandakaranya forest. When they saw Lord Ram, he was so beautiful, and that attraction due to their worship of Gopal had already been awakened. So when they saw Lord Ram, they wanted to engage in intimate devotional service, in a Madhurya Rasa, in love. But because he was a male and they were males, they became embarrassed and that sentiment shrunk. It was lessened. But Lord Ram noticed it and he wanted to encourage that. So when those sages left their bodies, they became sadhana siddha, perfected gopis in Gokul, so they could now associate with Krishna in this way. In the present verse in the Bhagavatam, we understand that it was the gopis who had children who were forcibly kept at home. In his comments on the 10th canto, Kavi Karnapura states that those gopis who had children were prevented from going to meet Krishna, as seen from later verses such as these. Krishna said, "Your mothers, fathers, sons, brothers, and husbands are searching for you." And the gopis replied, "But you have advised that the proper religious duty is for women to faithfully serve their husbands, children, and other relatives," revealing that they had children. Upon seeing the sweetness of Lord Ram, okay, next. For those gopis who could not go to see Krishna, intolerable separation from their beloved caused an intense agony that burned away their impious karma. By meditating upon him, they realized his embrace, and the ecstasy they felt exhausted their material piety. Although Lord Krishna is the supreme soul, these girls simply thought of him as their male lover and associated with him in that intimate mood. Thus, their karmic bondage was nullified, and they abandoned their gross material bodies. In this regard, the following should be considered. When devotees practice devotional service under the shelter of a bona fide spiritual master, they engage their ears and other senses in acts of pure devotion by hearing and chanting about Krishna, remembering him, offering obeisances, and personally serving the deity form. Thus, the devotees make the Lord's transcendental qualities the objects of their senses, as stated by the Lord himself. The devotees who take shelter of me transcend the modes of nature. Yet sometimes, devotees may take as their sense object mundane sounds and tastes, and that is material. Thus, a devotee's body can have two aspects, transcendental and material. According to one's level of devotional service, to that degree, the transcendental aspects of one's body becomes prominent and material aspects diminish. This famous verse from the 11th canto, with each bite of food that a person takes, three effects occur simultaneously. He obtains satisfaction, nourishment, and cessation from hunger. Similarly, surrendered souls engaged in bhajan simultaneously attain three effects: the awakening of bhakti, aiming at prema, direct manifestation of the Lord's beloved form, and detachment from material objects. Thus, those who eat only a little food will derive a little satisfaction, a little nourishment, and slight relief from hunger. Similarly, those who perform a little hearing about Krishna will attain a little bhakti, some realization of the Lord, and a little detachment. However, when one achieves unalloyed Krishna prema, the material portions of the body disappear, and the body becomes completely spiritualized. Nonetheless, so as not to disturb the false opinions of atheists and to protect the confidentiality of devotional service, Sri Krishna usually has his illusory energy exhibit the demise of a gross body. An example of this is the disappearance of the Yadavas during Mausala Leela. So it gives us a little indication of how pure our motives have to become. These particular gopis, it's described later, that their feelings of separation and their intense meditation on Krishna when they couldn't go see him was so intense, and because of their previous growing up in the village with the Nityasiddha gopis, they'd become so purified that they attained perfection, and at a later time were able to go and visit with Krishna in the forest and perform the rasa dance. So I hope I've created kind of a silhouette to show how unwanted the desire for liberation is compared to the desire for pure devotional service. And therefore, we'll read Lord Vishnu's verse one more time. My devotees, who are always satisfied to be engaged in my loving service, are not interested even in the four principles of liberation, Salokya, Svarupya, Samipa, and Sharsti, although these are automatically achieved by their service. What then is to be said of such perishable happiness as elevation to the higher planetary systems, which puts material happiness way down at the bottom of the list. Are there any questions or comments? Terrific, Ram Prabhu.
So you said no one knows for sure where one goes after death. I think for the devotees, or this is from Shashwat, if he has attained perfection, he goes back to the spiritual world. If he has not, he comes back to continuing devotional service until he is attained. So that's the simplest and best answer, I think. If he attains perfection, he goes back to the spiritual world. If he has not, he comes back as a devotee to continue until he finishes. You said also about the subtle body, you know, then nature takes care of it. I think rather than saying nature is either the agents of the Vishnudutas or the agents of the Yamadutas.
Oh no, not at all. The demigods give a soul a new body according to its desire. That Sadatad Bhava, the Bhava Rupa. The Vishnudutas don't come for someone who's going to go to the heavenly planets or someone who's going to come to this earthly planets, and neither do the Yamadutas come for such a person.
The Yamaduta doesn't?
No. Why would the Yamadutas come? Say a person's a devotee, like, as you've given the example. Right. Like in Bhagavad Gita, the unsuccessful yogi.
Right.
The unsuccessful yogi comes back. And he's going to get a human body. Is it the Vishnu Dutas or Yama Dutas who bring him?
Well, if he's unsuccessful, then he has to come back.
Right, but it's not the Vishnu Dutas or the Yama Dutas who come for him.
But first, isn't the Yamaraj judge him and then send him back to?
But the Yama Dutas don't come for him.
Well, they're the agents of Yamaraj. He has to be judged by Yamaraj.
That's not my understanding. I think Yamadutas is... It says that if one wears tulsi beads when he dies, the Yamadutas don't... Yamaraj told his agents, don't go. Don't you bring me to them. Don't go for them, right?
Anyhow, that's
okay, universal management. Yeah, anybody have any realizations? Ganagamya Prabhu?
Oh.
We'll stay with the point. If you have other, we can go.
I'm pretty sure that the Yamadutas don't come for devotees of any status or status. I had another question. You mentioned...
Are we finished?
Who does? I'm not sure, actually. I imagine that Krishna arranges himself, is what I've been told, and he arranges.
Well, how many millions of demigods are there? 33 million?
Yeah, there's many.
It's universal
demigods.
Management. And when that soul goes, didn't Prabhupada say that when someone's in a coma, they're deciding?
The demigods are deciding.
And then placed.
My question was, you mentioned that to protect, in one phrase, to protect the confidentiality of devotional service. And yet we're trying to open that up, and Lord Chaitanya is trying to distribute this love of God and make everyone aware of what the potential is of their spiritual soulhood, what they can actually achieve. So isn't that at cross purposes? You know, to protect the confidentiality of devotional service and at the same time spread love of God to everyone?
Well, in that particular instance, what he's describing is that those who have attained pure devotional service appear to die like an ordinary material person. Just after that, interestingly enough, because of time I didn't mention it, he says, but there are exceptions, like Dhruva Maharaj, who stepped on death, got on the airplane and left. Or maybe we've seen that Tukaram movie where he gets on the airplane in front of the whole village and disappears, you know, flies away. So what's being described in that particular circumstance is that in order to retain the confidentiality of what happens to his devotees, Krishna makes it appear that they die, when in actuality, they, as Narada did, simultaneously they attain a spiritual body and go back to Godhead. But it's not that all devotees who attain perfection get on an airplane and leave in front of everybody. So that's what's the distinction of that particular confidentiality.
Thank you very much for the class. You know what I feel? I feel like when I go to the mechanic, you know, if I have a problem with the car and the mechanic is trying to explain to me how the carburetor and the nucleus of the engine start working, you know, I get confused. So I just tell him, you know what, just fix it and I pay the bill. So I think that for me, you know, if Krishna give me the chance of liberation, I just want to be where Srila Prabhupada is. Mm-hmm. Just make it more simple, you know. That's my realization. As far as who comes to get you at the moment of leaving the body, because, you know, right now, you know, there is this thing going, you know. Srila Prabhupada, first of all, he says, first deserve, then desire. You know, in the process of Krishna consciousness, you know, Srila Prabhupada says, first deserve. You know, deserve means, you know, becoming a follower and becoming a street and, you know, doing what we're supposed to do. Then, you know, we will be able to decide. I think that is dangerous to start thinking about desiring some type of thing if you don't even deserve it. So it's kind of
wasn't the statement first deserve, then desire?
Yes. First
right?
Deserve.
First you deserve yes. Something. You attain a qualification.
Exactly.
Then you can desire that thing.
Exactly.
If you desire that thing without your qualification, yeah. Then why we should give it to you?
Yeah. The thing is that there is many people, you know, that is wants to desire before deserving.
Yes.
And
right.
That's the dangers.
Yes,
because Srila Prabhupada says best deserve. So anyway, that's also another feeling that I have. And who comes to get you? I have a personal realization, you know, because my wife, you know, she was leaving her body in Mayapur, you know, and we were going to New York Ratra Yatra, and she was with my sister and everything was fine. And, you know, I got a call, you know, from my sister, and she says all the devotees are around Matasachi. And right now, she's leaving her body right now.
Mm.
So do you want to say something to her, you know, because she's leaving right now. We're putting garland, maha water, tulas in her mouth, you know, she's leaving. So I said to my sister, yes, put the phone in the kitties, you know. And then when she put the phone there, I told her, don't go. Wait for me. You know, and then, you know, the communication went off. You know,
the phone went off,
you know, and I immediately turned back, you know, and we were in 235, you know, I turned back and I just went to the computer, you know, got an airplane ticket, you know, and then I didn't know if she stayed or she left. You know, I just took a plane and go. So then, you know, when I arrived in Delhi, you know, the first thing I did, you know, was go to the phone and call my sister, and she says, no, she's here. So then, you know, when I got back to Mayapur, you know, she was sitting in the bed, you know, all relaxed, you know, like nothing happened. So I asked Matasachi, what happened? What happened? And she says, I was leaving. He say, and then, he said, well, actually, I was like in a beautiful grove, in a beautiful garden, and there were two gopis that they were dressing me up to come and see Radha Krishna. And when I was going with them to see Radha Krishna, I hear your voice. So I stay a little longer. Here I am. So Srila Prabhupada guarantees that if we follow his mood and his lotus feet until our last breath, we will definitely go back home, back to Godhead, to Krishna. So that's my personal realization.
Sweet story.
Thank you, bro.
Samapriya?
First, I want to compliment Premananda Gore because he's been making some very wonderful statements for the last few classes. I just wanted to say that Lord Chaitanya came and he gave two things. First, he came to free all of the conditioned souls from the material concept of life and spread the chanting of the holy name on one level. And then he came to give Krishna prema. So there is a distinction between the same act. Lord Chaitanya is doing the same thing, but in two different ways. So this was mentioned before. Someone asked a question. So it's simultaneous that one can achieve the highest platform, and then also something else is being given to the conditioned souls. Lord Chaitanya didn't discuss the deepest, profoundest pastimes of Krishna and the gopis with everyone. So two things he gave. So I don't think that's a contradiction at all. It's not like black and white. There's a lot of different ways to look at things.
Jai Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.